What is PHP?
PHP is the language that everyone makes fun of. So that's what PHP is. If you've ever heard somebody make fun of a language, the thing they're talking about is probably PHP.
Welcome back to Backend Banter, the show about backend technologies and careers. Today, I think we might have a little bit more banter than normal. I'm famously not the biggest fan of PHP and Laravel, but one of the things I love to do on this show is bring on people that like other technologies and have different opinions than I do, so that you guys can get a lot of different perspectives. I don't want everyone just kind of regurgitating the stuff that I say, especially since, you know, a lot of it's wrong. So today I'm joined by Aaron Francis. Do you want to take just a second and go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. I am famously a big fan of PHP and Laravel, and I'm ready to banter about the back end. My name's Aaron Francis. I work as a developer educator at a database company called PlanetScale. We are very good. So if you need a place to put your MySQL database, you should choose us. And I'm also a Laravel developer and have been for many, many years and love Laravel a lot. I make some YouTube videos for Laravel, like in my spare time. And as a developer educator, I make a lot of YouTube videos about MySQL. So I do all kinds of stuff.
While we don't share a love for PHP, we do have quite a bit of common ground. I believe are you a Vue fan?
I am. I'm a big fan of Vue. That is definitely my front-end framework of choice.
Yes, me as well. Boot Dev is written in Vue 3. Big fan there. Also, obviously, PlanetScale. We did an episode about PlanetScale 6 or 7. Oh, that's actually probably been about 10 episodes back now. And PlanetScale is used in our CI/CD course on Boot Dev, which is awesome. So a lot of common ground. But today we're here to talk about PHP. And I'm at a huge disadvantage because I actually haven't done all that much PHP. I did a bunch of cramming for this episode, did a lot of PHP back in college, but it's been a while. So you could probably even just lie to me about how great PHP is and I'll just have to take it at face value. Can you tell us, let's just start with something really simple. What is PHP?
Yeah, so PHP is the language that everyone makes fun of. So that's what PHP is. If you've ever heard somebody make fun of a language, the thing they're talking about is probably PHP. PHP is a super old language, right? It's like one of the older languages that still exists. I think originally it was like truly a templating language, and you would mix in your PHP with your HTML and just like throw up a script and it would just load on the web server and kind of pull some stuff from somewhere and plop it into the HTML and throw it back to the client. So it was originally a scripting language and it's just, it's come a long way since then. It retains a lot of that simplicity, but we don't really use it as like a scripting language anymore. So like, A lot of the criticisms I see about PHP are like, oh, look at this, templating. And I'm like, I just don't ever do that. Nobody ever does that. So one of the things I do love about PHP is that it's just productive and it's just been around for 1,000 years. And I just like, I love using it. So yeah. that's a little bit of background on kind of what it is.
Well, I love the pitch of just productive. Like the problem is I would argue that's why I use Go.
Sure.
But okay, you said something interesting, which was like originally PHP was kind of scripting and templating, but now you use it in a different context. I'm guessing that context is like inside of like Laravel frameworks to build larger applications.
Yeah, exactly. So I think now, so like for example, in the Laravel framework, which is equivalent of Rails, but in the PHP world, in the Laravel framework, we in fact have our own templating engine, which is like, wait, PHP is a templating engine. And that's not like a lot of people are like, haha, you fools. Like, come on, man. Like
we've crossed that off my list of gotchas for later.
And so we have this own templating language called Blade. And so you'll see some of the criticisms online be like, wow, PHP is so insecure. Look, you could just dump this stuff out onto the page with this templating. And I'm like, yeah, but nobody uses that. Like, nobody uses just regular PHP. We use Blade as a templating engine. I think Symfony has maybe something called Twig. I'm not super familiar with Symfony. But yeah, our entire backends are now all, you know, PHP, much like you'd have Rails. You know, we've got proper models, controllers, jobs, queues, all of that stuff. And then a lot of people don't even use Blade as a templating engine. They throw it all over the wall to either an API or something like Inertia.js, which kind of like binds the front end and back end together with a thin like protocol layer.
It's so interesting that you say like raw PHP, templating isn't as popular. And the reason I say that is I went to python.org today just to make sure I wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
And I went to the like installation get started. And it was like, okay, download the Python interpreter, create a file called main.py, you know, print hello world, and then run Python main.py. And then I went to php.net and it was like,
not our best foot forward, HTML. I'm gonna be honest. Yeah.
Here's an HTML file, and it echoes a thing. And I was like, wait, how do I install PHP in the interpreter? Like,
you know how many years it's been since I've written the word echo? Like, it has been a decade since I've written the word echo. And I think fundamentally that's a big... I think PHP.net is a big problem for us, frankly. PHP.net is ugly, and it sucks, and it looks like it's, you know, 15 years old, which it probably is. So that's a problem. But I think the other thing is like one of the weird things about Laravel is that it exists in the PHP world. And what I mean by that is like I wouldn't pick up PHP to just do a raw PHP anything, frankly. The reason like Python is a standalone language, or Go is a standalone language. Fine, great, do all kinds of wacky stuff, but PHP is a standalone language. I don't think I would use it. And so there's like a real weird dichotomy of like people trying to defend PHP as a language and comparing it to like, you know, Python as a language. I'm like, yeah, Python's probably better. Like I just, you know, like your example there is true. Like php.net, well, it's kind of lame and it looks boring. Like
Laravel, you know, looks beautiful, by the way.
Laravel on the other hand, and that I think is my like that's kind of the weird part, is the Laravel the framework has such a distance from PHP the language in terms of like productivity and developer experience and batteries includedness, that I think the better, like, if people are making a decision about what they want to use, the better question is like, do you want to use Django or Laravel? And, you know, maybe people prefer writing the Python language and like, that's fine, I don't really care about that. But like comparing the languages and then picking a framework seems like, I would view the ecosystems first before you decide that.
That's almost a defining trait of frameworks in my mind. So first of all, I want to say like, yeah, I get strong kind of like Ruby on Rails vibes in the sense that like very few people write Ruby without Rails, it seems.
Yes,
and right. It sounds like today few people are writing PHP without Laravel, maybe, other than like, I guess there's kind of WordPress.
Yeah,
Laravel.
There's an entire other community of which I am not a part and can't speak intelligently to, and that's the WordPress community. Yeah. Don't know the first thing about it. Never written WordPress in my life. Prefer to avoid it if possible. And that one also gets like thrown at us all a lot. Like WordPress code sucks. And I'm like, maybe beats me. Right. I don't know. It's not my community. Yeah. Like I don't know. And to the Ruby thing, the Rubyists will always declare that Ruby is the most beautiful programming language in the world. And so it's like, okay, cool. Like you mostly use it with Rails though. So whatever.
Right. It like seems to only exist in that context.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So to your point about like choosing the framework first, this is actually really interesting because like, I think this is a defining trait of frameworks. So for example, in the Go community, there are very few like Well, there's really no like Rails equivalent or Laravel equivalent in the sense that it's like a fully featured framework that does all of the things, batteries included, right? Like authentication, yep. database, routing. We tend to like compose libraries, mm-hmm. but obviously Laravel, Rails, Django, these are kind of fully fledged frameworks. And I would argue that my definition of a framework is that like, instead of writing your application and injecting a dependency, you're like mm-hmm. starting with the giant dependency and you're like injecting your code into it. Yeah. And I would agree with you. Like if you're using frameworks to build web applications, you probably should start with the framework because it's not something that you can like migrate away from. So like in the sense that, you know, if you're using some little authentication library, you can fairly mm-hmm. easily swap that out, but it's not like mm-hmm. trivial to swap out Laravel for some other PHP framework, I would imagine.
No, I wouldn't think so. And I think that would be ill-advised anyway. And I think the question about like what is a framework and what is not, I think your definition is correct. I think, however, we've gotten to this point where a lot of things, like I think specifically on the JavaScript side, I don't know the Go world at all, but I observe the JavaScript world mostly from the outside, and I see stuff like Next being a framework. And I think according to the definition that you and I agree upon, Next is a framework. Yeah, like I totally agree. Like you write your code inside of Next and Next handles like calling your code, not the other way around. And so I'm like, yeah, Next is a framework. But then the term gets so muddied because people will start to say like, well, what about Next versus Laravel? And I'm like, yeah, those are like orders of magnitude apart. And it'll take my you know fanboy out of it and say Next versus Ruby on Rails, and I'm like, those are fundamentally different things. And people are like, I would much rather use Next than Rails. And I'm like, hang on, okay, so Next is a framework, sure, no, like let's move on, no problem there. But then you start thinking about what do other frameworks have, what do Rails, Django, and Laravel have? Well, they have authentication, they have authorization, they have a database layer that's built in, they've got caching, they've got queues, they've got routing, they've got like all of this stuff, this rich ecosystem of everything that you need to build a modern web application. Like how are you going to send emails? Like that's built into Rails and Laravel. And I think something that people miss is they say, well, I'll just pick the best in breed package and install it into my JavaScript application. And you're like, yeah, okay. So if we think about like a network graph, right? So there are like 2, 3, 4 nodes in this network. So you've got 3 nodes and they're all connecting to each other. You have a certain number of lines, right? Certain number mm-hmm. of edges between these nodes. You add a new node, the edges explode. You add a new node, the edges just explode. So every node that you add, the complexity and the interaction between the nodes, this is like standard network stuff, like increases multiplicatively or exponentially. I don't really know which one. And that's how I view these build your own framework discussions. It's like, sure, you could decide I'm going to install an ORM and I'm going to install an authentication and an authorization and an email sending and a background job and a scheduled task. Every one of those things you're adding is a new node in your graph of whatever your application is. And you then become responsible for maintaining that connective tissue between every other node in the graph. And so then you're like, all right, well, I'm installing this routing layer. How do I make sure it interacts with everything? How do I make sure it interacts with, you know, route model binding if I want to have /team/1? Like, oh, I got to do that. And then every single node is on its own independent upgrade cycle. And so you're like, oh, well, my ORM upgraded to 4.0.0. And now it's like, well, I got to make sure that that's compatible with my routing and with my background jobs and with my auth. And it's like, y'all, this is like, and that's where I think the framework discussion breaks down is like, sure, they're both frameworks, just like a bicycle and an airliner are both modes of transportation. But I think we're just talking about fundamentally different things.
I completely agree. And if anyone's doubting what you're talking about, just just go to your little Next.js project and open up the node modules folder and immediately lose vision of every other file in your project. Like, this is how we end up with 70,000 dependencies in node modules, right? And I think there's two, like, kind of solutions or approaches to this, like, exponential explosion of dependencies. The philosophy in the Go community is like, well, let's just have fewer nodes. And so there's like kind of the thought leadership in the Go community is like, well, let's just use very few dependencies. We'll shove as much of what we need into the standard library as we can.
Yep.
And then we'll like add extra stuff. And the Laravel approach, which I think is also a valid approach, is like, well, we'll just choose all of the dependencies for you and we'll manage them so you don't have to worry about it. Right. Yeah. The worst of both worlds would be like, okay, we're going to use all the dependencies and you're going to manage them.
Yeah. And the insidious part is it's spun as freedom. It's like, you get to decide, you get to build your own thing. And I'm like, I would rather build my business value than like cobble together a framework of, you know, 15 different packages that then are on 15 different upgrade cycles that I have to like manage. And so it's like, I get it. Like, you're telling me that I'm free, but boy, do I not feel free?
This brings me to like an observation that I've seen is like every programming community on Twitter seems to be very concerned with engineering, which I think is a good thing. If you're trying to like build a career as an engineer, you know, you're talking about code, you're talking about writing better code, more performant code, you're weighing dependencies. The PHP community on Twitter just seems to be making money. Like,
it just seems
to be all the people that are actually making money. Either as, like, indie businesses. What is that about?
it does seem that way, doesn't it? I think, so I have several opinions about this. One, I think, is that all of the money, like, all of the institutional money has flowed into JavaScript. And so... I think there's been a lot of like time on people's hands to do stuff that maybe moves the needle by a microsecond or two. And it's like, hey, you've got, you know, 7,000 engineers at, you know, Facebook working on React. And that's why we have the mess that we're in. And it's like, you know, PHP doesn't really have that luxury. We've never been like the cool kids, and we continue to not be the cool kids. And so it's like, it's like PHP / Laravel is like a 1994 Ford F-150. And you're like, that mother freaking truck will not die. And I just drive it from the farm to the market every day for the past, you know, 25 years, 30 years, whatever. And it just works. Meanwhile, like I feel like the JavaScript community is very, very, very invested in tinkering on their vehicle instead of like, where should the vehicle go to sell the thing that you're trying to sell? And they're like, no. Like, if we make the steering wheel go up by an inch, like, it's a little bit more ergonomic. And you're like, you got to drive the car, man. And so I do kind of feel like, because we're not the cool kids, which I admit we're not, and we don't have all the VC money pouring into like our space, we don't have the luxury of side questing very much.
Right.
And so we just don't end up on a lot of side quests. We're like, hey, this is really good, I'm going to use it and then ship whatever the end goal is. So I think people are focused on different goals, and a lot of the JavaScript community is focused on the tooling and like the internal, almost like navel gazing, and the PHP community is more like, I gotta put food on my table. And so we're like, I'm just gonna look down the road.
Yeah, that's definitely how it looks from the outside to me. And as someone who does like tinkering, much to the dismay of like my wallet, essentially, I look at PHP as a language and I go, ugh. But then, like, Taylor Otwell drives a Lambo. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, and it's not to say that one or the other is better, right? Because it's a silly discussion to have outside of context, right? So those 7,000 engineers inside of Facebook, like, their focus and their job, one, is to get paid by Facebook and to improve React or whatever. I made up 7,000. I have no idea how many people work on it. That's their end goal. And I think what happens is, the message gets delivered without the context of the end goal, right? Mm-hmm. And so on Twitter, we see a lot of thought leaders who are building, like who are actually building the tooling, and their end goal is to build and worry about the tooling. But we don't have that, like we don't make that context front and center enough. And so what happens is people who are then trying to build and deliver products look at all of these thought leaders and they're like, oh, they're building and focusing on tooling. I should focus and worry about tooling myself. And it's like, no, wait, y'all have entirely separate goals. Neither goal is inherently bad, but when you adopt the methodology of someone who's trying to go for a different goal than you are, you're going to end up spinning your wheels. Like you're going to end up wasting a bunch of time because you're operating by a set of principles that will not get you to the place you're trying to go. It will get you to the place they're trying to go, which is to build better tools. And so it feels like the discussion on Twitter is not nuanced enough, which shocker.
Yeah. Who would have thought? Hey, the communities of like, I'm starting a business as like an entrepreneur. I'm getting into coding as a front-end developer. I'm learning DevOps. I'm doing machine learning. Like all those communities kind of have huge overlap on Twitter. And like everyone's mm-hmm. goals are different and everyone's arguing about how to get to their own goal. You could be an indie hacker, right? Trying to build like a side project and arguing with someone that's like trying to get a job at Facebook. And like your goals are different and you're arguing about technology. And I completely agree. It's actually a big problem.
Yes, huge problem. It's so silly. Like why would I argue with someone about how to build a house if I'm trying to whittle a statue or something? It's like,
right,
we're talking about different things. We're both woodworkers. You're building a house and I'm whittling a little knickknack for my child. Like we don't really need to be having a discussion. And yet that context is lost and we're arguing about which tools to use. And I'm like, it's different use cases, man.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go ahead and yoink the use case right over to engineering. We're going to forget about indie hacking for a minute.
Great.
And I'm going to bring up, have you ever read the article, PHP?
Oh, yeah.
A Fractal of Bad Design.
Yep. Super, super duper have. Yeah.
So this was my introduction. I'm not going to make you like counterpoint the article. I didn't write the article.
No.
I just want to reference the article because like this is one of my first introductions to PHP in college. Was like, okay, we're going to do some PHP includes. And also my professor shares this article and says, oh, also PHP is an awful language and you should probably try to mm-hmm. not use it. And so I go, ah, yes, PHP is bad, right? Like yes, I'm just told exactly. this by my professor. I just like kind of eat it, hook, line, and sinker.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward 8 or 9 years and I'm like hearing about PHP again. And anytime PHP is mentioned online now, all I hear is we've changed. Like everything has changed. No one writes PHP like that anymore. What are some of the big changes that have happened over the years?
Yeah. So PHP is Fractal of Bad Design. A scathing article about all of like the warts and stuff of PHP. And you know, to some extent, like, meh, yeah. Like I get it. Sure. Yeah. We got some weird stuff. There are some bad language decisions in PHP, and I'm not gonna like try to tell you that they're good. Like some of the funniest ones are like in some function calls it's haystack needle, and in some function calls it's needle haystack, and it's like they swapped the arguments around for like array searching and other stuff, and so people will look at that and be like, what a disaster. What a unserious language.
Who's
PHP
driving
is.
Here? Yeah.
And I'm like, sure, that's not ideal. I agree with you on that. However, that like the haystack needle haystack mismatch was probably written in the late 90s or early 90s. And I think to their great credit, like there are some very good people driving the language itself. To their great credit, PHP is extremely backwards compatible. And you can imagine the kinds of Python 2, Python 3 fractal we would have when we're starting to talk about PHP, right? Because PHP is everywhere. It's like, what, 70% of the web? And, you know, maybe 50% of that is WordPress, or maybe even more of that is WordPress. And you can imagine if we start mucking around with like, oh, actually that one function is now the opposite. Like, we switched the order so that we would make some people online happy. It's like, I don't know what the value of that is.
The entire internet breaks that, is the consequence.
Yeah. The entire internet starts returning like negative one because it's like, I didn't find that haystack in this needle. And you're like, no, that's not what I meant. And so I think beyond that though, is like that article is a teardown and a critique of raw PHP. And I would again say, like, I just don't use it. I just don't use it. Like, so, and even from then, PHP's package manager is far and away one of the best ones in any ecosystem. Like, the package manager is incredible. We only have one of them, which is great.
That Composer?
Like, everyone uses Composer, that's right. Everyone uses it. It handles file auto-loading. It handles namespaces. It handles everything really nicely for us. Like, dependency resolution, you can't have. Like, I think in JavaScript, you can install like 6 versions of the same dependency if different packages require it.
Yeah.
And Composer just says no. Like, no, you've got to figure out which one you want, because this is nonsense. I'm not going to allow that. And so, that's like, great. The ecosystem itself has moved forward a little bit. Like, nobody's writing include this file.php anymore. We don't do that. We just use Composer auto-loading. And one of the great things I think about, so if we stay at the PHP level and don't talk about Laravel, I think one of the great things about the PHP level is there is an organization that exists to create standards for PHP that allow frameworks to interop nicely. And so we have this framework interoperability group. And the whole point of the PHP FIG is what they're called, framework interoperability group. It's like this group of people, basically group of big PHP people. You know, Taylor Otwell is one of them. And then there's like, you know, 50 or 60 more. And the whole point of that group is to be like, hang on, y'all. Like, we have got to decide what the interface is for an HTTP request. So what is like the interface that we're all going to agree upon and adhere to? And what is the interface for an HTTP response? And what is our like file auto loading format going to be? Because what we don't want to do is we don't want Laravel to have like this way that it auto loads files and Symfony to have a way that it auto loads files, right? We don't want that. That's not good for PHP. That's not good for Laravel. That's not good for Symfony. And so we have this group that proposes these standards, and like code style is one of them. Like, we have a PSR that just says like, here's how you should style your code. And now we can all agree that across the entire ecosystem, like, hey, this code is PSR2 compliant. And like, we just use PSR2 styling. That's just what we do. And we can all say like, hey, I wrote a caching library. It adheres to PSR, whatever it is, PSR8. And so as long as your framework like will take a PSR8 interface, my caching library is going to work. And so what that allows us to do is truly, I think, push forward really, really good packages and libraries, because we're not like, oh, I need to write, you know, I need to write a caching library for Laravel and a caching library for Symfony or an HTTP layer for whatever. It's like, no, it's just, you know, it's just PSR8. And so I think that's one of the great things. I would like actually to see that in the JavaScript world, for them to like sit down and decide, hey, let's talk about module resolution. Yes. Let's talk about bundling. Like, let's make some decisions that we're all like, all the framework authors get together. Let's make some decisions and decide like, this is nonsense. We need to be on the same page here. And so as far as a fractal of bad design, yeah, we got a lot of warts. I will admit, we have a ton of warts. We've got great backwards compatibility, and we've got a whole organization that's focused on like improving the language, and a different organization that's focused on improving the ecosystem. Not to mention, you move up to something like Laravel and it papers over all of those problems, because it's got string helpers and array helpers, and it's got all of those things. And it's like, yeah, we'll just, you know, we'll hide the warts because we can, because we're a level up from the language that must maintain this like 30-year backward compatibility.
Yeah. For any JavaScript listeners in the audience, if you heard PHP, a fractal of bad design, and you're chuckling to yourself, JavaScript's just as bad. Like, it's not, you can't, if you're a JavaScript fan, you can't be dunking on PHP.
Yeah.
And Python does famously have like the worst backwards compatibility ever. The 2.3
y'all had that big schism. The 2.3 schism was bad.
It was really bad. And like, we still see, like, when I started learning Python back in 2010, I was like just getting, like, I was on Python 2 for the most part, and then there was Python 3. And like, mm-hmm. in 2023, I'm still dealing with like Python 2 crap.
Not ideal.
It's pretty crazy. Okay. So we could put PHP, the language itself, behind us for just a second. Okay. I know you'd obviously rather talk about Laravel. It's the thing you do.
Yeah, big time.
Tell me, like, let's just start with, what's your favorite thing about Laravel?
Yeah, so I think my favorite thing about Laravel is a little bit of a meta principle, and it is the fact that there is a Laravel LLC company that pays, it employs like, I don't know, 8 people now or something. And the entire purpose of Laravel LLC is to make Laravel the best ecosystem in the world. And so it is crazy to me that, so like, imagine if, you know, you've got Rails and you've got DHH. DHH is really focused on Basecamp and making $100 million a year or whatever it makes, right? Which is awesome. Imagine that, but instead of DHH doing Basecamp, DHH solely focused on everything that could ever be wrong with the Rails ecosystem. Boom, that's what Laravel is, right? So what that, like, it's a meta principle, because how that trickles down is Laravel has answers for everything. And you may, like, you may decide, like, I actually don't want to host on the official Laravel hosting platforms, which are, you know, they're paid platforms. That's fine. There are still other options. And I would say maybe 5 or 10% of what Laravel LLC offers to the world is paid, and the rest is just fully open source. And so, like, you start all the way back at local development. We have first party maintained, like, local development answers for getting Laravel, getting PHP, MySQL or Postgres, Redis, DNS mask, all of this stuff set up on your local machine, such that you can walk out of the Apple Store, open your machine, download Laravel Herd, and then literally 3 minutes later be developing a Laravel application. No homebrew, no Docker, nothing. And then it's like, oh, you like Docker? Well, we've got an official Docker solution. Oh, you're on Windows? We've got solutions for that. And so it just kind of builds from there, that it's like every single thing that you might need, there is an answer. And they're continuing to push the bounds of like what's available for free, which is kind of nice to me. So that's like the meta answer about the ecosystem.
I loved this. I jumped into Laravel again in preparation for this episode and downloaded like a few of the starter projects, and they're like maintained mm-hmm. by the core Laravel team. So you're not just like kind of searching GitHub, trying to find random projects,
right.
It's like, this is the recommended way to do it, which I think is fantastic. Go is not the same in that it's not like a company behind Go specifically. It's like Google sponsored, but mm-hmm. a lot of the ideas of like, we have this benevolent dictator, right? This benevolent organization that's doing a ton for the community, building like official tooling. I think mm-hmm. that's fantastic for the ecosystem. And I'm going to quote, I think our mutual friend, Dax Rad, he was a guest on the pod a while ago. I'm not going to quote him because I'll fuck it up, but I'm going to say things that he kind of has said in the past, which is, I'm a big fan of these companies that, like, for-profit companies that are building in the open source space and have some sort of monetization strategy, right? So with Laravel, obviously, like, Laravel's free and open source, but there's all this like additional tooling and help and hosting that you can get that's paid, because it gives me assurance that, like, when I invest my company's time and resources into this stuff, that it's going to be maintained. Because you can have like a free open source package that you use, and I use a ton of these as well, but like, it just stops being maintained because the maintainer's like, I don't have time for this. Like, this is the thing I've just been doing for free. So I am definitely not against people building good businesses around something open source. In fact, I prefer it that way sometimes.
Yeah, and I think what you see kind of that on the other side from DHH is like they're continuing to push Rails forward as they extract stuff out of Basecamp. So they kind of have a similar model, but different. And then they have like a full on like steering committee and, you know, core team and all of that. So they're kind of mirroring the same structure, but there's gotta be an incentive, right? There's gotta be money. Like, it's crass maybe, but there has to be money or it stops. Like, what do you expect? Well, of people?
Yeah. I it can't be any other way. Like, people will only do so much for free for so long. Like, we all eventually need to be paid to work on stuff full time. Like, unless you're independently wealthy and just love doing it. Pretty crazy to have other expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Okay. So we got what you love, which is like the ecosystem and the company and the organization behind Laravel. What's a thing you don't like?
Man.
If you say nothing, all credibility goes out the window.
I know. That's why I really don't want to say nothing. I'll be honest. I have a really hard time saying something I don't like about Laravel. And again, I think I approach it from a very almost like lowbrow workman point of view. That like, this is the best hammer I've ever seen in my life. It's like, yeah, but it's a hammer. Like, don't you want to like have, I'm like, no, man, I can nail so many nails with this thing. And so I have a hard time even thinking about like what's terrible about it. I think some of the common critiques are it's too big, it's bloated, it's slow. And like, sure. Yeah. Like there's a huge surface area. And I will say I've not been a Laravel beginner in a very, very long time. And so maybe it is true that like the fact that we have all the batteries built in means you have to learn a lot of batteries. And maybe that's overwhelming. I can't really speak to that.
There was a lot of files when I spun up the getting started.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, there can be a lot of files. There can be a lot of concepts, like you've got, you know, built in, you've got queues and scheduling and mails and, you know, routes and middlewares and all this stuff built in. So I can see that being like, whoa, dude, I just want to freaking start an app here. So I can see that being a problem. And then the speed, I understand that a lot of people will look at that and be like, oh, PHP is so slow, isn't it? Especially compared to something like Go, for example. Mm-hmm. And my point of view on that is just so like, man, that's a champagne problem. Like, I personally am just not, like, I just don't have that problem where I'm like, I've got to serve 50,000 requests in a second, otherwise I'm going to lose $1 million. It's like,
well, to be fair, it's like,
I would love to have that problem.
You're making money hand over fist when you start having.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So, and I think, you know, I think that a lot of that is countered by, frankly, just like throwing more money at it. PHP has this really great request response model where it just dies. Like, the entire universe is constructed upon request and the entire universe is destroyed upon response. And so it's really, really, really easy to fit that into like a serverless architecture, for example, because that's serverless's whole deal is like one thing at a time. And PHP is like, yeah, I've been doing that since the 90s. And so there are ways to get around like some of the slowness of PHP. But frankly, I'm just not like, I'm not a successful enough SaaS creator to have ever worried about PHP being too slow for me.
I love that. Yeah. The context I've worked in my career, I've certainly never created a company that's needed the scale, the speed that Go offers. I've only created one company and we don't have that scale yet. But I have worked at companies that have needed it. And it's typically not in the sense, at least in my experience, the companies I've worked for, it's not been like, we have so many users, we can't serve our web page fast enough. That's never the problem. Sure. It's like, we're processing the entire Reddit pipeline of data. Right. Like that's the problem that we're solving with Go typically.
And I've run into problems with like that with PHP, where it's like I get a 4 gigabyte CSV file from a vendor and I got to churn through it. And it's like, even then the database has become the bottleneck for me. It's like, I can just spin up eight PHP processes, which is what I did. It's just, you know, fork out a whole bunch of processes and run the same thing. And if I were more sophisticated, I would have maybe, you know, written that particular part in Go. But again, I'm just a workman driving F-150. It's like, yeah, it works. we'll keep moving. And so, yeah, that is a valid critique of PHP and maybe Laravel specifically.
Yeah, well, like if your process is parallelizable, right, then you can just kind of throw money at it. And it tends to not be as much of a problem. So I totally get that. Okay, so I do have some specific questions about things you may or not like. Now I'm realizing they might just be PHP questions.
I can talk to both sides. So just hit me with what you got.
The first is dynamic typing. Are you a dynamic typing fan, or does it bother you?
Love it. Live for it. Love it.
So
just give me the freedom of turning an integer into a string and back and forth again, and I'm a happy man. So here's the deal. One is I have to expose my biases. I don't like TypeScript. I feel like it is a hoop jumping practice to satisfy something that is not really a problem. So now that you know that, listener, you can disregard everything else I say because I'm not a trustworthy
source. You don't like
source.
TypeScript here. You're okay.
No. Okay, good. So typing in PHP can be very gradual. And there are instances where I very, very much like it. And there are instances where I super duper don't care about it. And so like, let's say like working in a, you know, web application, you've got a user model most of the time, right? You've got a blog post model most of the time. You know, in PHP, those are proper like classes. So that's the first thing, is we're not having these, we're not usually passing around objects that are shaped a certain way, but don't have any enforcement, right? So I feel like TypeScript maybe exists because in the JavaScript world, you do a lot of like JSON object passing. And it's like, what's the shape of the object? Nobody knows.
Right.
And then in PHP, it's like, hey, give me a user model. And you know what the user model is. And so that's one place that I like
Explain
to do,
what
you know,
mean,
a little
like,
bit.
What's the difference? Like you say, you know what the user model is. Do you get like, when I go user dot, do I get like autocomplete? How does that work?
You do. And well, you wouldn't in PHP because you'd have to use the arrows, not the dots. But that's a little bit of a quirk that people hate also. So yeah, you do. So like, let's say, for example, I have like a login function, and the login function has a argument or a parameter called user, right? So just login parentheses user, $ user, but that's PHP, right? So login $ user. And at that point, user can be anything. User can be a number. User can be a string called foobar. I don't love that. If I know as the developer, they need to give me a user object. And when I say user object, I mean a class instance of a user. So what I will do is I will type hint that argument and say, this argument must be an instance of the class user. And so then PHP will enforce that whatever argument is incoming to that method is an instance of an actual class that you can like command click into and go to the class. And it's like, here's the user class definition. And so instead of just being like a pretend object shape that we're all agreeing on to call user, it's like, where's the user.php file where I can go and look at the properties, the methods, all of the affordances that are given the user object. And so I feel like that is a big difference, is I'm not maintaining like a type definition of a user has a first name and it must be of string. I have a user class, and the user class exists out of necessity, and I'm not creating some extra layer on top. It like, what, how else am I supposed to write a program without a user class? And so then I can enforce that when you pass me a post to be published, that post is of instance type blog post. And then once I'm inside that method, I can call, you know, arrow publish or arrow delete, because my, you know, my IDE will auto complete like, hey, I know that this is a class. I'm going to go look at the class and see what methods are there, see what properties are there. And so that's one area where I really like, you know, gradual typing to say, if you're going to tell me to log somebody in, it better be a somebody and not a string called foobar. And then actually inside of those classes, so like if you have a user class, for example, you can have like class level properties, obviously, of like, let's say, you know, name, email, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can declare those in the class, you can declare those as strings. And so then if you try to set the user's name to the, you know, an integer one, it's just not going to work. Your IDE is going to tell you, but it's also just not going to work. And so you can gradually type these things, but there's no like, there's no maintaining of some external definition that can get out of sync. It's right. It's like all kind of inferred out of the work that you're actually doing. And now do I like type all of my variables and say like $name equals quote Aaron and like somehow enforce that that's a string? No, I don't do that. But like at the class level or the object level, yeah, I put some types on it and I'll pass them around to know what my affordances are, what my methods are, that kind of thing.
Here's my hot take. I think you might like static typing. You just don't know it. Here's the.
I think that could be real. That could be real.
Let me explain. So it sounds like, and again, I'm not a PHP expert, but it sounds like PHP has a system kind of like Python, where like you can add type hints, and they're not really enforced by like the interpreter, but your IDE picks up on them and will kind of give you the autocomplete and the hey, you're using a string here. Does that kind of sound like what
the language the PHP will refuse to run? It'll throw an exception if you pass the wrong type. So there is safety. Yeah.
So it is strong. Okay, it's stronger than what Python's doing then, I think, because in Python it like the interpreter ignores it, but essentially your IDE will pick up on the.
I think as long as you've declared strict types, which is a PHP option, which I think all frameworks declare strict types, it won't coerce the types for you. It'll error out.
Got it. Okay, yeah, so this sounds to me like at least some level, some like if we can treat static typing as not like a binary thing, but more like a gradient, then it's definitely some level of static types. And it sounds like the thing you don't like about static typing is actually just a TypeScript specific thing, maybe, because I hate it too, which is like you have this like separate file and you have to like import your types and you have to maintain your types.
Yeah, and I don't like the gymnastics, I think, of TypeScript, where I feel like there's a completionism streak in a lot of TypeScript people that's like everything must be statically typed, and if I can get everything typed just right, I won't have any errors. And that's just not been, like, that's just never been the case for me. And, like, frankly, types have never been my biggest source of bugs. Like, logic bugs have been my biggest source of bugs, where I'm like, oh, I was actually off by an hour in that calculation. Like, that wouldn't help me with that to have TypeScript. And I feel like one of the problems with TypeScript, from my point of view, is all of these amorphous blobs of objects. I understand that, like, you need visibility into what blobs are being passed around. And we just don't have huge amorphous arrays that we pass around in PHP. And frankly, if we did, I would probably put that into a class on its own. I'd make a data transfer object. I'd make a DTO that is like more structured, frankly, just so I can get the IDE auto completion. Like I just feel like there's a difference in the way the language works on the PHP side, where we're very like object oriented, and PHP side is like, here's a JSON object, like, good luck.
So I'm with you again, and let me explain. So when you say I would use a class, in my mind what I hear is I'm using static types, in the sense that what is a class if not essentially a definition of like properties and methods that exist on a thing. And I feel like it's the comparison to TypeScript that's hurting. God damn TypeScript. Like, because in TypeScript, you just like make an object literal. Like, you don't like create a class for it. You just like open curly brackets and start typing stuff. And then in TypeScript, in its own annoying way, you have to like go make an interface for it. Right.
Right.
Whereas in Go, what I would do is create a struct, which is essentially for the purposes of structuring data, works like an object, right? I create the struct definition, and then I make a bunch of instances of the struct. It sounds like in PHP, you do essentially the same thing. You're creating a class, and then you go create instances of the class, and you get auto completion on it. And in my experience, when I don't have that, just the struct or the class or whatever with type hints, I do get a ton of type errors in the sense that, like, I misspelled the property name or something and my IDE didn't yell at me. But if you take that away, like, I don't use 90% of TypeScript's features on the front end. I really just, like, want to know what's in my stinking object. Like, I want to know what properties are.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, I don't have any grandiose, like, opinions or points of view on, like, static typing in general. Like, I'm just not a very sophisticated developer, frankly. what I do have points of view on is TypeScript, and it looks like it sucks. Like, it just looks hideous. It looks like a pain, thing. And it looks like it sucks. And I just don't want to use it. And if you can trick me into doing typing like PHP has, like, yeah, I'm a simple man. Like, if I expect a user, I'm going to tell PHP this should be a user. And, like, I don't go super far into creating DTOs so that everything would be typed. But if I start manipulating, like, a multi-dimensional array, and in PHP, an array can be like a hash map in Ruby, so you can have, like, named keys, which is it does both. Yeah, so it supports numeric indexes just like an array, and it supports named keys like a JSON object or a hash map, right? So if I start creating this really big associative array, which would be like a hash map, and I'm starting to shove all these different settings and keys in there, I'd be like, oh, this is weird. And I wouldn't think, like, I'm betraying the gods of types. I'd think, like, oh, this is kind of nasty, isn't it? And I would create, like, a user settings DTO where I just, like, dump it all in there and I get these nice, like, features. So yeah, I don't really like, and as do I like types? I don't know. I like, you know, gradually typing my stuff in PHP, but I don't like TypeScript. So you tell me.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I need to play with PHP a little bit more is kind of what I'm, if I'm gonna have my own opinions. That's why I brought you on, so I don't have to have the opinions. You can have the opinions.
Yeah, and my great flaw or my great strength is that, like, I don't really have that many opinions that I feel like are applicable to other people. Like, I have a ton of opinions. I've got so many opinions, you could ask me anything and I would have an opinion on it. But I don't really feel like, you know, I have been put in this weird position of, like making videos and having followers on Twitter, and people expect me to say, like, what is right and what is wrong. And I'm like, I don't know. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to do? What do you like to do? What is your aesthetic taste? And, like, yeah, well, maybe consider this then. And I just don't give, like, I don't give strict answers. Like, I hate React personally because I feel like it's too low level and too finicky and requires me to care about things that I shouldn't as a human have to care about. The computer should have to care about it. But maybe most importantly, I find it aesthetically unpleasing. And, like, why would I ever tell somebody you shouldn't use React because it's ugly? It's like, I'm not going to tell you your baby's ugly. Like, I'm just not going to use it because I don't like it. And so I get in this weird spot where people are like, what do you think about this thing? And I'm like, I don't know. Never used it. Huh? What's Svelte? Don't know. Never tried Svelte. I have no idea. Why do you want me to have an answer on that?
You'll never tell someone you're not going to date them because they're ugly, but, like, you're still not going to date them, maybe, right?
Yes.
I just saw that clip from It's Mostly Technical, right?
Yeah.
That was fantastic. I loved that. Okay, so...
Yeah, that was a fun one. I was trying to... Like, I started to use Remotion, which is a tool to build, like, videos programmatically, which freaking rules, and it's amazing. But it's a React thing. And so I used React for the first time, and I was just like, y'all, I don't like it. I just don't like it. I don't want to tell you what my dependencies are for some use memo or use callback or whatever the hell y'all are doing. Just figure it out yourself. You're a freaking computer. So yeah, mostlytechnical.com. Check it out.
Yeah. I will be listening to more Mostly Technical episodes Well, you had me at programmatically make videos, and then yeah, you lost me at React. We'll see.
I know.
Might,
pity.
Might still have to check it out, but okay. So you're not not a super huge fan of static typing, although there's some muddy definitions there. Do you get tired of typing dollar signs?
You know, I have been doing it since I think I first picked up PHP when I was 13 or 14. So it's been 20 years now. And it just feels right to me, frankly. So all of our variables are preceded by a dollar sign, and people are always like, that is so weird. And it's like telling a fish that water is weird. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? I have literally no idea what you're talking about. Oh, the dollar sign. Yeah, that is kind of weird, I guess. No, I like it. I dig it. I think it's like, I like it. It's like, yeah, it denotes that you're working with a variable. There's no var, let, const. It's just like dollar sign name. Like, yeah, hell yeah, that rules. So that's about it.
that's my aesthetic argument against PHP. But again, it's not really something. It's not an argument you can take to the bank. I agree.
Yeah.
It's all I can do is silently believe that your baby is ugly.
Yes, exactly. And that's like, yeah, that's fine. I don't really care. That's fine.
Cool. This has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. I have one last question, which is just, what's your spiciest web development take?
I think we have passed peak React. I think the React primacy days are behind us. I think a confluence of events, including interest rates going back up, companies folding, and also companies focusing on shipping, you know, taking their goods to the market instead of tinkering with the vehicle. And a few questionable choices from Vercel and the Next.js team. In terms of like feeling, I feel like they're pushing complexity more than they need to, especially with this new like app router and React server components. They're like continuing to push complexity instead of productivity. I feel like people are starting to wake up a little bit and realize, you know, we are really spending a lot of cycles working on stuff and we're not getting a lot out of it. And so I personally think peak React everywhere all the time, I think that's behind us. I could be 100% wrong, but I do think that we're getting close, if not there already.
React is a zero interest rate phenomenon. You heard it here first.
That is my opinion fully.
I love it. Thanks again for coming on, man. Can you plug your stuff? Tell people where they can find all the cool stuff you're building and making.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're into, all right, buckle up. We got a list here. If you're into databases, PlanetScale.com/MySQL. I teach like an 8-hour course on MySQL for application developers. So like, what do you as an app dev need to know about the database? We also have a good YouTube channel, in my opinion. If you want to learn how to do screencasts, screencasting.com. Great domain name.
I'm going to be taking that course, by the way.
Yeah. So that's a solo outside project, screencasting.com. And then I spend a bunch of time on Twitter. So twitter.com/AaronDFrancis. That's where you can find me.
Amazing. Okay. Thanks again, Aaron. We'll talk to you later, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. See ya.